Madam, upon arriving this evening, a guest, Ms. Shreenan, engaged me in private conversation.
Yes?
She's asked me to inquire on her behalf if she may please peruse your private collection in hopes of borrowing a book. Right. I'll just say, perhaps another time.
Welcome back to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I'm your high-spirited host, Miranda Merrick. How wonderful it is to see you all gathered here in one piece. One place. Please make your way to your favorite seat. And just be sure there's nothing to disturb you under that seat. A maid has reported that she may have seen a mouse or something. Anyway, let us begin tonight's reading, shall we? You may remember a while back, well, those of you who remain, those of you who have returned, that I drew your attention to the books on the very loftiest levels and highest shelves towering over your delicate heads. I regaled you with musings about their dubious dispositions, and with good reason, too. The fitted metallic jackets, robust shackles, and heavy iron chains that anchor the old books to their assigned locations are a true necessary evil. You see, through no fault of anyone currently residing in the Midnight Library, many of these books have powerful and grievous curses in them. On them. Within them. Well, in any case, they're supposedly extremely dangerous, and I would like to assure you that it's probably hardly very true. In times long past, this manner of protection, the proclamation of dire curses, was the only way some ancient institutions felt they could safeguard their precious tomes and sacred books and records and manuscripts from the stealthy thieving fingers of those who would purloin the books, either for themselves or, more likely, for the sake of selling them to gain profit from them. Vandalism was also a great threat to any recorded book of law or instruction. The books were at risk from anyone seeking to spin the world their way. It may be difficult to believe in modern times, but there was a time in history that having access to or owning a book was a rare and privileged thing, and being able to read was even rarer. Books contained knowledge, and with knowledge came power. In ancient times, when the majority of people couldn't read, the power was completely in the hands of those who could. You can't read and don't know what the laws are or how much in taxes you must pay? I'll just read to you what the book says. Tonight's reading is sponsored by a warning from the Midnight Library. It's a fact that our books are a major attraction, but in the wrong hands, there's a dire reaction. The magic old books emit hexes and curses. You'll need more than a doctor and a team of nurses. Lift even one book from its rightful place. You might shout for help, if you still had a face. There's no telling which book has the bad or the worse. You might simply go mad or be in need of a hearse. Please heed our words, for we surely know best. Keep your hands off the books and remain our dear guest. In Assyria, in the 7th century BC, there was a young but mighty king named Ashurbanipal, who proclaimed to his people that he valued knowledge above all else, stating, "I intend to learn the wisdom of Nabu." Nabu was the god of knowledge and reading and writing. Anytime you see the graven images of the old Assyrian kings, those with the illustrious long wavy beards, the one with the reed quill tucked in his belt is Ashurbanipal. As king, he began to amass a vast library that would become larger than any library in existence known at that time. He sent his servants far and wide to collect and copy all of the books and manuscripts they could find. Books on history, celestial bodies, mathematics, dream interpretation, and understanding the wishes of the gods through ritual and sacrifice. Tens of thousands of books in varying forms were gathered and added to Ashurbanipal's treasured, expanding library. What is compelling to consider is the fact that these were not the easily read, pretty papery books, clearly printed with vivid dark ink, that we have and imagine when we hear the word book. These were brittle papyrus scrolls, delicately inscribed segments of leather and wood, and finely etched wax panels. More permanently, there were the clay tablets, heavy, thick, rectangular, stone-like tablets. They were wet and impressionable during their creation, which was accomplished with a reed stylus that impressed into the damp clay the precious words of the academic, the king, or the commandments of the gods. The freshly imprinted tablets were set in the burning sunlight of the day, or fired in a kiln to emblazon the tablet, hopefully forever, with the pronounced words. When the empire was attacked and the palaces were torched, all that remained of Ashurbanipal's grand collection were the indelible words upon the weighty clay tablets. And on those tablets were etched the very first book curses. "Whosoever shall carry off this tablet, or shall inscribe his name upon it side by side with mine own, may Asher and Baalit overthrow him in wrath and anger, and may they destroy his name and posterity in the land." Asher and Baalit were ancient and powerful gods believed to most assuredly fulfill the words of the curses, especially words directly proclaimed by the king himself. The curse threatened the potential thief or usurper with violent misfortune, followed by the possibility of their death, or one might imagine their children's death, that would ensure a halt to their descending lineage upon the earth. Their family name would be forgotten, and in ancient times, a name set forth by way of a forward-marching bloodline was prized like power and gold. Back then, to continue to have living descendants that bore your name was the only way to proclaim that you ever existed. These modern name-bearers maintained your tenuous grasp on immortality. Now, I may be jumping ahead of myself here with my enthusiasm to inform you that many of the early book curses go into great detail as to exactly what kind of gory consequences would be visited upon the prospective thief or vandal who might be tempted to harm or steal the precious books. But for now, I'll behave and save these details as a kind of dessert for later. The next notable time period that we find the demonstrative ill wishes in writing is during the medieval ages, and understandably so, since the age was fraught with struggles for power and wars over swaths of land and entire countries. Again, bear in mind, those who could write the laws were the ones enforcing those laws, and those who could produce a book that had within it the decree of their king or queen or god plainly written, or even better, plainly written and highly illustrated with bold depictions of brash or sainted characters and glistening gilded flourishes. Well, who wouldn't believe and follow every instruction and rule from a book like that? Who indeed? Come meet us for drinks at the Broom and Fang. Help plan some hijinks and be part of our gang. We know some of you are just like us. Your circle is small and built on trust. You dabble in the dreadful, your soul's a bit black. You once joined the dark side and never looked back. You haven't got time for the dull, bland, or foolish. Your heart belongs to the weird, grim, and ghoulish. So tonight we extend a rare invitation to meet with us for secret libations. The mood is spooky, macabre, and uneasy. It's beautifully evil, our little speakeasy. So come meet us for drinks at the Broom and Fang. Help plan some hijinks and be part of our gang. It is true that the books produced in the world during the medieval and middle ages are some of the most beautifully recorded documents ever created by human hands. The scribes who made them were generally well educated, impeccably trained, and disciplined, and, at least on the face of it, mostly dedicated to the faith they were bound to diligently transcribe holy texts from. And before the Gutenberg printing press was invented, transcription was the name of the game. You couldn't just purchase a copy of a desired book. The book, especially a holy book, had to be copied by hand, each letter of each word, line by line, without any mistakes. Laboring in cold, dim rooms hunched over by candlelight, a single book could take months or even years of a scribe's life to complete. Every aspect of creating a book, down to the making of the expensive vellum parchment and the mixing of the specialized inks and paints and the binding of the books, was tied to the livelihood of the monk or scribe transcribing the books, and was dependent upon the quality of their conscientious, meticulous work. Any scribe whose work was found to be unsatisfactory for any reason could be punished in a range of merciless acts, from something as light as praying for hours or days for penance, or being fed only bread and water until their skills improved, to being subjected to lashings across their bare backs with flesh-cutting flails or ropes entwined with ripping metal barbs. What was that old saying? Oh, yes, the beatings will continue until morale improves. Seriously, though, scribal abuse was a real and accepted part of life during these times. One colorful example of this is the recounting of the torture of the rebellious scribe Johannesus by the command of the Byzantine Emperor Justinian II, who was also called Justinian the Slit-Nosed. Johannesus was forcibly brought before the enraged emperor, who ordered that stiff, dry reeds be forced up under Johannesus's fingernails, and then driven up under the skin further still until they reached the second knuckle of each finger. Then the emperor called for parchment and pen to be given to Johannesus and demanded that he write. Johannesus was witness to have grappled the pen in his mauled fingers, but refused to write the phrases he was instructed. He also refused to write in the ink which he was provided. Instead, he scrawled out a prayer to God, using the fresh blood that flowed from his mutilated fingers. When he threw the bloody prayer in the face of Justinian, Johannesus was sentenced to die a mouse's death, which may not sound all that horrific, but it did mean he was crushed between two massive slabs of stone. The scribes, who had worked so diligently for untold numbers of days and nights, often worked to the point of being physically broken themselves, for all of them suffered from enduring terrible working conditions, sustaining pitiful maladies, such as failing eyesight and dwindling muscles and crippling arthritis. In an attempt to protect their precious books, the scribes used the only weapon to be found in their humble possession, their words. And since people of early times were so compelled to believe everything that was written in the cherished and rare tomes, after all, they often contained the commandments given directly from the God that held their very fate in his heavenly hands, well, they also believed the power of the curses added by the scribe who had made the book, mainly because the curse seemed as though it was the express written word of the God whose words comprised the book, because a scribe would never pen his own name to the curse. Oh, it's those sneaky little tricks in life that are sometimes the most immensely effective, I've heard. In any case, it is the belief in these curses that is the very reason so many of these sacred but antiquated books survive to this day. So, what did the curses say? Some curses were comprised of simple rhyming prose, such as this medieval book from the year 1461, whose curse is obviously the will of the scribe, reading, "Hanging will do for him who steals you." And, "Steal not this book, my honest friend, for fear the gallows should be your end. And when you die, the Lord will say, 'Where's that book you've stolen away?'" You would think the Lord would know and wouldn't have to ask, but... Other curses promised elaborate tortures and condemnations that would surely be visited upon the lowly robber or vandal who stole or defaced the prized publication, such as this curse from 1172, placed lovingly inscribed in the end pages of a hand-copied Bible. "If anyone takes away this book, let him die the death. Let him be fried in a pan. Let the falling sickness and fever seize him. Let him be broken upon the wheel and hanged. Amen." This curse is packed with Dark Ages imagery for us to envision. Boiling oil was once used as a war tactic. More as a defensive tactic, as vats of bubbling hot oil were poured over the precipices of castle walls and on to the groups of besieging attackers below. A method of torture was to actually boil people in oil, or to dismember people and fry them. Some watched in horror as their freshly severed limbs sizzled in a pan right before their own eyes. The falling sickness they wished upon you was in reality the unrecognized and chronic illness of epilepsy. The fever the curse directed for the thieving was likely any number of untreatable but common infections or communicable diseases and poxes that ran rampant at the time. Now, a few of these you might have suspected you might be at risk of just by chance, but to be broken upon the wheel, now that was something if you believed you might even have the slightest risk of happening to you. I guarantee you wouldn't even go near the book that promised it to you, let alone steal that book. A person condemned to be broken upon the wheel, also known as a Catherine wheel, faced a fate you really would think twice about your worst enemy being sentenced to. Maybe. Giant, sturdy wooden wheels were used in several workaday ways in medieval times. They carried along enormous carts and wagons, of course, but they also ran in a sideways motion parallel to the ground, almost like a robust merry-go-round mechanism, but flanked by immense oxen that turned the wheels, which often pushed a colossal grinding stone. A wheel like this was as tall as a man and weighed hundreds of pounds. To be broken upon the wheel was either to have your body woven through the solid spokes and your bones then broken with heavy wooden mallets or metal bars, or you would be securely lashed to the surface of the great wheel that would then be pushed free to roll down a rocky road or a steep stony hill or mountainside, so that you would be broken and mangled in this fashion. Those punished in this way that survived were sometimes then hanged afterwards, but were sometimes left upon their wheel, which was put on public display. If, somehow, unfortunately, your head became detached, well, it was jammed onto the post in the center of the wheel to keep your head with the appropriate body, I suppose. A rare kindness, given the circumstances. Another curse, I believe I read somewhere, makes mention of a ride upon a Spanish donkey, which, believe you me, is not the joyride you might imagine, not in any way. But if you like the sound of being nude and forcibly made to straddle a sharpened metal beam, and increasingly heavy weights being tied to your legs as the cutting wedge drives itself upward, becoming ever more present within you. Having trouble imagining what book would be worth this? Us too. And we own some irreplaceably rare books. Well, I hope I've impressed upon you the origin of the value of some of the world's most valued ancient books, my lovely. We certainly think the world of our prized collection here in the Midnight Library, all of which I gently caution you to respect. Thank you for visiting, my dear guests. Please stay in the cordoned off areas and keep your hands in your pockets as you stroll past our book carts. Have a good night.
Madam, Miss Shreenan has stood stiff as a board in the main hall.
Is she dead?
No, she's clutching a book, Hex and the Single Witch.
Oh dear, and the accompanying curse?
I can only make out. Whomever steals this book is done. They'll stand in place for 101.
101 what? Minutes? Centuries?
It's been chewed by demons, I'm afraid.
Oh, how many times must we warn them, darling?
Apparently continually, madam.
Apparently, Mr. Darling.
The Midnight Library is brought to you by Miranda Merrick and Astonishing Legends. Sound design is by Chris at Sounds Like an Earful. Please consider becoming our patron, where everyone gets something, by visiting patreon.com/midnightlibrary. And for some real fun, check out the Midnight Library and Broom and Fang pub merch on redbubble.com. Just search Midnight Library.